an infernal that destroyed the spire and a large proportion of the wooden roof structure of the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris reinforced a cautionary message to Chinese cultural heritage protection and preservation departments about the need to better protect vulnerable heritage sites. Unlike the ancient buildings in Europe and America usually come with a stone skeleton, China's ancient architectures have a higher fire risk, as they usually are made of wooden frames. Today, let's talk about the importance and some measures of upgrading the protection and cultural heritage and relic sites. So, how come there's such a heated debate and discussion about this topic right now?
We can say the fire at Notre Dame in Paris rang the warning bell for China. Hours after the fire in Paris, the Palace Museum in Beijing, which is China's former imperial palace from 1420 to 1911, and also known as the Forbidden City, held an emergency meeting to go over its fire prevention efforts. As He Yang mentioned before, like in ancient buildings in Europe or other Western countries, usually the buildings are used stone skeletons. But in China, most of the historical buildings, they were made of wood. And Forbidden City, it is the world's biggest architectural complex made of wood. According to official figures, the museum has some 50 firefighters on duty around the clock, a fire engine, over 160 hydrants, thousands of extinguishers, and fire walls. And the reason why now the country is trying to improve its efforts in giving better protection of cultural heritages and relics is because this year, up to now, there are six major fires that have taken place at Chinese cultural heritage sites. So this is a very serious situation in China. We need to give better protection to those cultural relics and heritages. So on January the 6th, a hall at Yunyan Temple in Jiangyou, Sichuan Province, burned down. And on February the 2nd, a wooden family temple from the Qing Dynasty in Nanchang, Jiangxi was destroyed by fire. And the most recent incident was in Xinjiang, Fujian, when the late Qing Dynasty residence of Wulu, the province's last Zhuangyuan, and was damaged. So fire this year also destroyed a bridge dating from four centuries ago in Nanping, Fujian, a Qing Dynasty residence in Wenzhou, Zhejiang, and an office structure from the 1930s in Fuzhou, Jiangxi. So we can see, now it's only May, right? But we already seen six major fires that destroying the really precious cultural heritages in the country.
Doesn't it just major heart bleed when you read news like this? What do you think, Carl?
It does. And look, there was a fire, I remember seeing, in Sichuan province at the end of 2017. There was like a 15-story wooden pagoda in Sichuan that burned down. And it was huge news because it's this beautiful, very old structure, but of course it's wood. So it just goes up like a candle. I mean, wandering around the Forbidden City, the scale of the problem, I think, becomes fairly obvious because, yes, there is lots of firefighting equipment, but if you look at a lot of the little plaques on it, all the buildings that tell you what they are, an awful lot of them have, and then this building burned down in this year and it was rebuilt, and then it burned down again and was rebuilt. So I think the Forbidden City itself in the last two imperial dynasties had something like 50 fires and large parts of the building, including the royal throne itself, burned down. So this is a very long-standing problem for some of China's historical sites.
Yeah, and it's really also interesting to try to understand why in some countries, such as China, that we use so much wood to build structure. But there is that difference in other places around the world where maybe trees are not as prevalent or when it comes to building technique, there's different preferences and approaches when you see that often in Europe and America, you see big stones being layered up and applied to build castles or housing and that kind of thing. So, well, I'm not an architect, nor am I a student of it. So if we have a chance one day, I think it would be really interesting to find out more about all of that and the history of that. But when we look at the situation here in China, now the challenges of protecting ancient architectures with wooden structures has come to the forefront of the discussion. So what are the real challenges that I suppose the relevant government organs and also some NGOs that are involved in this area are facing every day?
I think, of course, we know that woods, they're inflammable. So it's really hard to protect them from fire. You need to be super alert and you need to ask the supervisors to take full charge of event of like avoiding those would be inflammable. It's really hard to control the situation. And also sometimes we know in China, especially during some peak seasons, the visitors to those historical sites are huge. So you need to better regulate those visitors to avoid them causing any harms to the historical building because they're very, you know, vulnerable.
Definitely. No smoking comes to mind first.
No smoking, but also, you know, if you're going to keep using these buildings, that naturally leads to problems. So, for example, if you're going to run lighting through a building, you need to have electrical cable, you need to have lights, lights produce heat. You might have offices which have air conditioning, which have their own, you know, heating elements to them. So I think it's just a natural part of the challenge that if we want to keep using these buildings, then we just have to be aware that we need to be very careful if we're not going to cause trouble. But I think even beyond things like fires, you know, these buildings, some of them are just really old and those structures naturally start to fall apart. So, for example, the main gate at Tiananmen that goes into the Forbidden City, you know, in the 1970s, they basically had to rebuild it almost from scratch because it was really, really old and it was falling apart and it was just becoming unsafe. So I think, you know, looking after these structures from this, from dangers like fire is just part of a larger process and a larger challenge that China's got of. It's got all these buildings. They're made of perishable materials.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a lot of time and effort and expertise in trying to protect them.
Yeah, definitely. When it comes to wood, I didn't know that they're so perishable until we did some research for this topic. As, you know, the sun, wind, and rain, that's definitely doing harm to the wooden structure, and not to mention bugs. So maybe ants and other abrasive forces, and that makes the wooden structures quickly deteriorate. And these days, with paint and other preservative measures, wooden structures still need frequent repair and replacement work. And actually, this is sort of a study in its own in how to preserve wooden structure in super old buildings. And, well, what one silver lining out of all of this is, I suppose, there is this growing awareness of, well, we need to do something to protect and possibly slow down the aging and sort of perishable period for these wooden structures. But yeah, Carl.
I think one of the big challenges, though, is it's one of manpower. So it's having enough people and resources that can actually do this work. So looking, you know, at Beijing, looking at a small scale. So a lot of the Hutong housing, for example, you know, they have small, relatively simple wooden structures. But there's a lot of Hutong housing in Beijing that's been torn down because it's old and it's unsafe and it's been ruined by water and by use and by time because there's just not people who know how to fix them. So even, you know, if you're looking at a small, you know, residential structure and you need to get people who can come in and actually restore some of these individual houses, and the city government is, you know, at various times said, we don't have the people who've got the expertise to do this. So that's part of the reason why some of the Hutong housing has disappeared, because there is that lack of trained, qualified craftspeople who know how to do this work. And I think that's one of the big challenges. So obviously here we're talking about, you know, the things that can go wrong and the end state that we're trying to get to, which is that they're protected for the long term. But I think the interesting challenge is going to be, how do how will China train up this basically a generation of craftspeople and skilled technicians who can do this restoration work?
That's a really good point. And I see that there is the emphasis or importance given to traditional and ancient relics and sites that, restoration work and preservation and special funding goes to these projects. But when it comes to those old houses in a Hutong area or, that kind of thing, when it's for civil use, and there is simply not similar kind of scale of attention that's given to that. And then I think, and even if you look at the practice of preservation and stuff, you see that two completely different departments are involved. One's cultural and heritage and relics protection. The other one is, I don't even know what it's called. It's just, there's not that kind of attention that's given to these civilian houses. Sometimes they're sort of left to perish, and then we'll just build new ones. It's really interesting what the perception is when it is devoted for these different types of restoration and preservation purposes. So when you look at all these challenges that we've talked about with the ancient buildings here in China, people are now talking about digital technology or new technology can be employed to better preserve and protect. And how can that be done is my question here.
Yeah, because at present, our country is promoting the digital technologies, including like laser scanning, 3D modeling, and photogrammetry to conserve cultural heritages, especially some ancient architectures, such as UNESCO heritage sites as Yungang Grottoes and the Dunhuang Mogao Grottoes. Because by using these technologies, if one day it may disappear, but you can still keep some, the replicas or the basic informations of these heritages in the society, and you can trying to restore it to its original form because you got all the data, all the information. But it's not the prime solution to the damage, but it can help a little bit. Because before, we only say ages ago, maybe those sites are only have some, damages due to the wood's flammability or pasturability. But now we have so many new challenges showing up, like the fault, the electrical faults, and loose supervision. But I think with the adoption of or the introduction of technologies, it can definitely help or improve our protection methods.
Well, Carl, do you like this idea of employing 3D modeling and laser scanning amongst other technologies to protect or at least keep a file? That doesn't sound that promising, but certainly at least you have the file to rely on if something bad like a burn down happens with these sites. What do you think is the way forward here?
Look, I think certainly having laser scans and 3D images and photos and all that sort of stuff is useful. And the reality is that accidents do happen, things will disappear. Even if they're not necessarily rebuilt, at least there is a record of them and there's a record of how the cities are changing. But I still think it doesn't get around the challenge of doing a bit more heavy-duty preservation work. And one interesting thing for me on this topic is, how do we deal with the idea of something being ancient? So I'll give you an example. So in Japan, in Mie Prefecture, there is a shrine, and every 20 years they tear the shrine down and they rebuild it identically on a site next door.
Yep.
They've been doing this every 20 years for about 1,300 years, possibly as long ago as 2,000 years. And it's still treated as an ancient shrine, although the reality is all the materials are no more than 20 years old. I think we can be very precious about, trying to preserve the original materials and the original structure for some of these buildings, but we also need to come to terms with the fact that they wear out, things break down, and they need to be replaced. And if it's done sensitively, if it's done well, if it's done with skill and care, it can still be treated as a beautiful, you know, relic and an authentic representation of an ancient object.
Mm-hmm.
I think what can put people off is if you look at some parts of the Great Wall, which have been rebuilt a little bit like Disneyland. A friend of mine, when he came to China in 2005, the part of the Great Wall he went to literally had a Mickey Mouse train going up to the wall. Like, it was incredibly fake. The wall was basically a replica. And so he walked away from that experience thinking, "Oh, why did I bother coming to China to look at this thing if it's basically made of concrete?" Whereas if that had been sensitively done, if more care and attention had been paid to making sure that it reflected what was originally there, I think people wouldn't maybe be so hesitant to rebuild some of these structures. So rather than just trying to preserve them or just trying to take pictures of them, actually give them a serious overhaul so they can be there for future generations. And the fact that parts of it have been rebuilt is not necessarily a bad thing if it's done well.
You touch upon something very interesting here, Carl, because you're also pointing at, I think, a very different perception towards what restoration should be. With the Great Wall example, yes, I've seen some of the pictures. Well, and also the Great Wall is massive. It goes through multiple provinces. Miles and miles of the Great Wall we do have. And there are sections when, well, it's different local governments are in charge. And sometimes in some of those segments, I would question the aesthetics of the leaders in charge of the project. With the concrete thing that you just mentioned, and did I hear Mickey Mouse in Disneyland? Well, I think that's an interesting analogy used, but certainly one thing I can't agree with is that you, like, just placing concrete over all bricks or whatever material that was used to rebuild these parts that simply have been dilapidated. I think this is actually a problem with what do you see as beauty? And is it, I suspect that sometimes the leaders were thinking, oh, I want this to be sturdy. And so the beauty of it might not have been taken under consideration. But there is also, you know, beauty is perceived in the eye of the beholder, right? And sometimes when people don't necessarily have this idea in their minds that when you restore something, should you make it look exactly or as close as it should be like the original before you started the restoration work? And that's not always agreed upon. Sometimes after experts being employed, actually, and teams are formed, and then sometimes experts say that, oh, we should restore it to its full glory back in the day, hundreds of years ago. And back in the day, sometimes these temples and statues, they were made of gold. They were super bright. And if you actually look at ancient documents, that was what was supposed to be. But hundreds of years later, they turned gray, they turned worn out. And so should we restore them to its glory hundreds of years ago or to the point when we started the restoration work? That's one thing. And also there's a major difference in restoration ideas between the East and West. In the East, or let's just say, let's use China and Japan as examples. And I've read about the same shrine that, Carl, you've mentioned. We like the restoration work to appear as if you can't tell that I've done some work to restore it. It should look intact. But when you go to Greece, for example, or some of the European countries, restoration work happens, right? And then they use different material to rebuild the arm, part of the temple, and then you can tell there's a difference in color, and that was meant to be. So in their philosophy, it's like, I want to let you know that this, the arm of this chair or the leg of this statue has broken off, and we've done work to put it together now, and you can see the whole thing. So which is better? Well, in our Oriental appreciation of these things, we would think most possibly, oh, this is not good for appreciation. We don't want our future generation to see a statue that has a different colored arm than its original. But in the West, or some places such as Greece, that's accepted, and that's the standard practice. So you see these really different ways of how to do the work. Carl, I'm sorry, you have a lot to say, and I sort of took up a lot of time.
No, I was going to say, I think even, like you say, it's a big difference between East and West. I think, again, it's even a difference within China. So I'll use the example of the parts of the Great Wall that are quite old. They have had a very light touch in their restoration, and there are the parts that look like Disneyland. So I think even within China, there's a big debate about, you know, how much we should restore something and, you know, is something authentic. You know, there's a great example near where I live, Nanluo Guxiang, which is like a little shopping hutong. And people have said, oh, it's like a really authentic hutong. I think, no, it's not. Some of those tiles are made of plastic on the Chinese-style roofs. Like, it's almost nothing authentic feeling about it. Mm-hmm. It's a very thriving commercial street, and I don't, you know, fault it for that. But is that really what we want to have as an idea of restoring cultural heritage?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much work should be done to restore something, and also how much realistically can be kept? Because China's a really big old country. There's a whole lot of stuff that's just not going to be able to be preserved. So I think there has to be that question of how much work should be done to preserve it, and in what kind of way, and what resources is the country prepared to actually invest?
That's a really good question. And Huangshen, what are some of the plans that are sort of in action right now that China is trying to better protect cultural relics?
And I think, like, the National Cultural Heritage Administration is to work out a plan to better protect cultural relics and speed up the creation of a safety oversight platform in 2019. And also, Beijing will make Great Wall repair, and I think there's a project I'm really excited about is Beijing's Rianmingyuan, also known as the Old Summer Palace. It will kick off its Restoration 1860 project, because this project is aimed to restore the cultural relics and nursed in Rianmingyuan, and it's open to the public. Because group visitors, you can book appointments through its official website to check how the restoration work goes. And at the same time, they want to maintain the historical authenticity of the cultural relics and also reflect its aesthetic value. Because in China, I think the main way we adopted in terms of restoring or renovating the cultural sites is Shoujiu Rujiu in Chinese. You're trying to renovate it based on its original forms. That's why I appreciate the event of digital archive, because you recorded all the information down, then you better know how it was supposed to be like.
Yeah, it's almost like now we have a plan B, a fallback plan. So if things go wrong, we know what to resort to, kind of thing. But also with new technology, fires most possibly can be better monitored. Well, maybe that is an improvement. But I think this will require the efforts of many parties to make it work to spot the fires. We'll be back after this break.